Okay, what is your name, sir?
Hola, my name is Gregorio C. Barrera. This is my mother's last name. She was a good woman. And I was born here in Star County in March 3rd, 1917. I arrived all the kids due to that time. Just running around, eating, being whatever your mother could afford, and going out, enjoying, getting together with our friends. The kids today, you know, they get together, drink a few beers, play a little pool. Oh, I like to play pool. That's my main
sport.
After that, I started school in different places. At that time, my mother sent me to a Spanish school, get a little check, a nice teacher, and there were a few pupils there. She was teaching us Spanish. Her name was Miss Reina. After that, I didn't like it very much, you know, going to school like kids do, they all don't like to.
And how old were you, sir?
Huh?
How old were you in school? What year is it?
How old?
Uh-huh.
I must have been 7 or 8, something like that. And then I transferred to the public school. Uh-huh. It was an old building out there. And it was a teacher named Mr. Peeble. It was real, huh? But we get along okay. I studied, I did my best. I went up from first, second, third grade. Then there was another school which was the grades. You get more grades that change different schools.
Mm-hmm.
There was a school out there where the Knight of Colombo is,
okay.
They was in high school.
High school, yeah.
And I went out there.
Did your parents push you to go to school?
Oh, yes. Yeah. And studied. It was doing very good up to sixth grade. Then on 7th grade, to another school. We was in the Ringo building, the fourth out there, and I went there until the 8th grade. But by then I was growing up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a little a chain on my the way I had to dress, you know, because like I told you, my family was very poor. They couldn't afford to buy me shoes. My parents were parents and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So I hate myself because I was very fretful. I didn't want the girls to see me. And so I quit. I quit on the 8th grade. So I started to work. I looked for work in my hometown here in Rio Grande, and I found Mr. Elizondo. He used to deliver papers, newspapers. At that time, we had soldiers in the Fort Ringo. And it was a big Fort Ringo, the houses, barracks, and everything. So he told me to, he gave me a job as a newspaper boy. And so every day with a big bag on my side, I could deliver paper to all the camp houses, sergeants, majors, generals, soldiers. I walked the whole camp every day with a big bag on my side, you know. On Sundays, the papers were a little thicker, because they had a lot of advertising and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I used to, this car, this wagon, I had to put that this wagon all the way around before the living papers.
Uh-huh.
And then on every last day of the month, I had to collect the money from each and everyone, and I bring that to Mr. Elizondo. After that, I got another job at the theater, Dreamland Theater, belonged to Mr. Abundio Contreras, as a janitor. I had to clean the building, open it, lock it at night when the movie was over, and then I started buying myself clothes, you know. I was looking more decent then. So, but still, we were not eating right at my house. Like I said, my father, his job didn't pay him much. So that at that time, I don't remember the year, but it was when President Roosevelt started the PC camp, Civilian Conservation Force. And all the people that were in need to be allowed to go out there, send a boy, a son, or whatever they have, for 2 years. To work.
Okay.
And I happened to join the CC camp and went to New Mexico, close to Ellison Butte. I spent there not only 2 years, but they gave me an extra year more. My check was sent over to my family. They didn't give me much to spend, but I was happy.
You were happy that your family was getting
it? Yeah. Okay. And then after 3 years, they said that was enough, they sent me home. Once I got back to my hometown, I decided that there was nothing good in Rio Grande that I could do, because I didn't have a good education or anything like that. All I could do was money or work. So I decided to join the army.
So you joined the army? You weren't drafted
in the army? No, I volunteered.
You volunteered?
Yeah. They both to come to the courthouse, pick up the volunteers or the drafted, and they take them to San Antonio, Fort Sam Houston. Here I was inducted into the service. There was in 1941. A few months in between Galveston and Houston, the place was camp.
Mm-hmm.
But then, after being there for 2-3 months, we moved to El Paso and spent there another month or two. Then they moved us to San Francisco. From there, we bought a ship, big boat, a luxury boat.
Right.
It was nice. Well, I was young, and I was moving around, and I was happy, I was enjoying scenery and seeing cities like San Francisco and all that.
Wow.
I was happy.
Mm-hmm.
So, I took us to the Philippines from San Francisco. We board the ship, and we went to the Philippines. The funny thing is that we stopped at Hawaii, right close to Pearl Harbor there. There was a big club, they say Aloha. And everybody went out to see Hawaii, you know. But my luck didn't hold out, that put me in guard. I had to stay on the ship.
Uh-huh.
Well, sometimes your luck, you're not lucky at all. So after that, everyone came back on board again, and we continued until we got to the Philippines. All we got there was a big band, And a lot of people there on the dock, and we stay there, and a lot of kids swim in the water. We could throw them pennies, and they could dive and waist deep in there, get the penny out. Mm-hmm. And when going, everybody was happy after that. That time it was nice and peaceful, everything. So then the people to on the truck from there, from that place where we stopped, we went to a camp, a Filipino camp, Kostenberg. With bamboo and all that, so it was big. Mm-hmm. And I was there, I could take a little absence and could go to Manila, could go to Baguio. Beautiful city. Manila is very pretty too. The feeling is nice. Beaches. The weather was good too. And I was really enjoying myself. I was happy out there.
Did you understand why you were there?
Huh?
Did you understand why you were there and you know what was going on with the war? Do you have an understanding of it?
Oh, I didn't understand that. You mean the...
Why were you there? I mean, what was your understanding?
Yeah.
What was your job there?
We understand the people because they do speak English. Because Philippines, they have a main dialect, Tagalog. Mm-hmm. But most of them speak English.
Okay.
The United States had control of that island at that time, in their own language too. But most of them speak their English. So we got along pretty good. Everybody was nice. We went to dances, we went to picnics, we go all over the city looking at everything. And we really were enjoying ourselves up to that time. Was, remember I told you I visited in 91, and in 91 I was already in the Philippines, so I didn't last very much in the States.
Okay.
So I went to over there to the Philippines, and I was happy. And then December 8th came around. That's when the Philippines, Japanese decided to attack the United States. They attacked, a surprise attack on Pearl Harbor. They destroyed everything they had out there. Next day, they jumped and attacked the Philippines. As I told you, I was stationed on a Kostenberg close to an airfield named Clark Airfield, where the Americans had airplanes, B-40s, B-17s, a lot of hangars, a lot of people out there working. And as we were rookies, they took us all around to our position to show us how to manage our weapons,
mm-hmm.
how to work them.
Mm-hmm.
I was with a group with a 50 caliber gun. A gun that you could swivel around and shoot low flying planes. And there was, in our group, there was another gun, a 37 millimeter, which was in a little carriage, and it could shoot a little higher, to higher airplanes. Then there was another group with 3-inch guns, that gun that I could go shoot the highest flying plane. Oh, that very day I never forget, December the 8th, because at noon we went to the barracks to have lunch. And everybody was talking. I guess we didn't hear much about Pearl Harbor during attack. Todos and thing about it, the big generals and all those that were in command, they didn't say anything to us about that.
Why do you think that?
2 years, present day as the other day, every day we passed, you know, enjoying ourselves. And then when we were having lunch, we had a radio, more radio on the window there, was playing music, beautiful music. And I was eating and enjoying the music. And then all of a sudden the music stopped. Then a voice came on the radio. And this, it was a lady's voice.
Okay.
I learned that they called her Tokyo Rose.
Tokyo Rose?
Very good English, and she said, at this very moment, the Japanese Air Force is bombing Clark Field. It was around 12:30, something like that. And there, Clark Field was right beside us. Clark Field was right beside us. And he said, what's wrong? Is that a joke or something? And then we went out and looked around, looked up in the sky, nothing, there's nothing to see, but sun was shining. It was a warm day and nothing was happening. We just said somebody was joking or something like that. So we decided to go in again into the barracks. But some of us, after we already eaten, we stay outside. And then we hear a murmur, airplanes coming. They were far away. And as they got closer, we kept looking at them. And somebody, a boy said, they're Americans. They're American planes. The planes began to get closer and closer. Then somebody hollered, they're Japanese planes.
Uh-oh.
So right away, everybody jumped out of the barracks into their pickup truck, and we scrambled back to our position. Because I was on the back of the truck. So I was going and I looked up. And the planes were almost over the airfield already, and I could see they dropped something like pamphlet. They shine when they turn over with the sun, when the sun hit them, and they were coming down. By the time I got to my position, the bombs started falling out here in the airfield.
Are you scared?
Destroyed. The planes were all lined up very nice and neat. The hangar, men were out there. They opened it down to be here all over. Planes, fire. There was one wave. Then another wave of airplanes came in and did the same thing. And then another wave. Three ways that airplanes went through over directly across them, but they destroyed almost everything. We were at the edge of the airfield, so we didn't get the bombs didn't get any closer to us. But then, after the high-flying planes went over, the Japanese then in the zero small fighter planes. They traveled everything they was moving with the machine gun. And something funny happened to me then. You see, when you join the army, the first thing you learn is to obey orders. And he proved that what being the old head, our position, our place to what to do. Mm-hmm. We had these machines, 50 color machine, they could do all around. We had a gunner, we had a feeder for the to put the bullets in the air, we had a spotter, and I was the water cooling machine. I had a tank with a pump where I can keep pumping and the water could go into the around the barrel of the machine to cool it as the fire. So we were in a hole about 80 feet in the curve of a big cover, and I'm about 4 feet deep. And I need for a water station with my tank of water where I was working. And the plane was over the place. They had thousands of planes over there. And then all of a sudden, one of them planes started coming straight at me. And I just kept on pumping. I didn't know about it. My crew, I didn't look at my crew. I was looking at the plane. Mm-hmm. And I would keep on pumping. And I see the bullet hitting the ground and a little puff of dirt to come up as they were walking straight at me. So I kept on pumping because I didn't know I was doing what I was supposed to do. But the rest of the crew had already taken cover. And one of them turned back and saw me there with my eyes wide open and still pumping. And he jumped up and grabbed me by the neck and pulled me out and threw me on the dirt there against the bank. And that zero with his bullet went right through. When I came back...
Where you were supposed to be? The bullet hit it?
Yeah. That guy, I was very grateful to him. His name was Springer.
Springer.
That's the first time and last time I saw him. Because after that bombing, after the raid on that airfield, we really had nothing to protect. The field was destroyed, everything, so we had to move. So we moved from there and went farther down, close to Bataan.
Bataan?
Bataan is a peninsula close in the island of Luzon. It's an island whose name is Luzon, and it has a little arm sticking out, peninsula. It's called Bataan. I didn't get nothing. I heard that a guy got scared and jumped out of the porthole, and he was killed by the shrapnel of the bullet. And after that, we hear that the Japanese had broken the front line. They penetrated already into Bataan. So we keep moving back. And another thing happened to me too at that time. We got on a truck to go back, retreating, you know, going back. And we had to cross a bridge, small bridge. There was a stream of water on it, a small bridge. And the driver of this truck, I don't know where he got to the bridge, he hear the whining of a bullet, the shelling, because the Japanese start shelling again, and you can hear a little whining where the bullet, the shell is coming in through the air. And he got scared, he stopped the truck on the bridge and jumped and ran, and he left us all in the truck. So we scrambled out of the truck and we scared all around. And finally somebody, that child just went somewhere else. You see? He was just scared and he didn't know where the child was going to hit. He had to go. So somebody got the nerves and got back on the truck and drove it away. And he left me behind.
Oh.
So, that if you had my rifle, my canteen, and all that, I started walking down the road, and that day, that time, it was a little cloudy. It was, you can hardly see the sun, but there were a lot of clouds. I was walking, and then I began to hear the murmur of the airplane coming. I hear the planes coming. They said maybe they're going to bomb some other place.
Right.
Because next to Bataan, there's Corregidor, an island, a port. Corregidor, you might have read about that. So I said they're going to bomb Corregidor or something. But something came. Put me something. I was alone and nobody to tell me anything, so I just sort of got off the road, went on down the bank. I mean, it was a steep bank going down like that. I keep walking. Then I came to a tunnel about 4 feet wide. And I looked in there and I didn't see nobody or nothing. But something pushed me in there, you know? And when I got in under that tunnel, the bombs started falling all around me. They were bombing the road where I was in. See? As they thought they were.
And who pushed you?
Eh?
What pushed you? What pushed you inside there?
I don't know.
You don't know?
Yes, something that I can't get it. I was expecting to bomb that little old road.
And when were you captured?
Eh?
When were you captured?
I'm coming to that. It's a long story. Very long story, but I'm coming to that. After they got to bomb that road there, I came out and kept going. Far down the road, I found an MP. And he told me, what regiment are you? He told me, you go that way, you'll find your men out there. So I went there and I got together again with the men. And at night, we could get around some of the Spanish-speaking people, soldiers, we were Spanish-American. We get together and form a circle and pray, because we were we're all scared. We were, like I said, I was just a rookie. I didn't know even how to shoot a rifle. And we pray, and the General MacArthur, who was in Corregidor, left Corregidor. He went to Australia somewhere, and. In charge, he put General Wainwright. And in Bataan, Wainwright put General Edward King Jr. as commander. And that we were supposed to fight as long as we could to try to hold. But we hear rumors that a convoy from the United States was coming in.
Mm-hmm.
It could be in a day or two with troops and all that. Never got there. And as the food was getting low, we ate one half cake in the morning, one half cake at noon, and one half cake at night. And we had a lot of malaria. All kind of sickness on that place, and some of us were scavenged around looking for something to eat. There was a lot of hot pepper plants, a lot of banana plants, It was like a jungle, you know, you could find a lot of things. It was bushes with a roots that looked like sweet potatoes.
Yeah.
So some of the bananas bunch was green. So what I did was cut a big bunch of bananas, dig a hole and cover it with dirt. The hot dirt would ripe the banana in a few days. Then I grew the ripe banana. And that banana would fill your stomach. And sometimes when I didn't have a banana, would dig a little root that had the root like a sweet potato and a nib on that. And then I heard about the Americans, some of them could keep iguanas, they could keep snakes, and they could kill monkeys, and boy, you just see a monkey being killed. It's just like a little baby. It could cry, and well, the men were hungry, they could eat anything. So they eat monkeys, iguanas, snakes, whatever they could get. And most of them were gone, getting weaker, sicker, and with nothing to eat and no medication. So the last moment of close to April the 8th, we were in a bad state of health, so we didn't know what to do. So I praised General Edward King, because he knew about what happened to us. I prayed for the good decision. Otherwise, if he didn't surrender, we could all be killed.
Okay.
You see, I was in a group patrolling out there, and then I could hear tanks, Japanese tanks all around there. There was no place to go. There was no place to hide.
Right.
So when the order came to surrender, a little glad, because what we could lose by surrender could be lose our freedom. We didn't know what to say, but we hoped they was on the, they could keep us in a corral or in a camp, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know, we were very wrong. We lose our freedom, we lose to an awful lot of brutality. They could slap you, kill you, like killing a fly. They were mad because we hold them for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
We hold them that they had a plan of trying to get the island more sooner than that, but we hold them back for 3 months and they were mad. So they were mad at us too.
Mm-hmm.
So we surrendered. We surrendered. When we were out on patrol, a ship came with a white flag, and the captain told the Captain Gonzalez, who was in charge, that we were supposed to go somewhere, drop our weapons and everything we had, and to go to a place near Corinto, on the southern tip of Bataan. It was called Kevin. Japanese get us all together, they put us in a mall of a hill facing corridor.
Mm-hmm.
A gun behind us. We all in front like a shield that started shelling corridor. And corridor didn't know whether to shoot back or not because we're in front. So finally, they decided to do something. They shoot one shell over, trying to see if they could go over us.
Mm-hmm.
And when that shell hit, we all scrambled. We barrels out together again, and then the march began. They get out, they line us up, and we start marching. We march for 60 miles or more. And as the men, like I said, we're already sick, hungry, and thirsty, and we had no eating for 2-3 days, and no water to drink. And I think when this road we were going through was so dusty, dust could get in your mouth, your throat, your nose, your eyes. And pretty soon, a lot of men started falling along the road. And the Germans would come over, kick them, hit them with a bayonet, trying to get them up. If they didn't get up, they just shoot them. By the time we got to San Fernando, there was not the place where we were going, but it was about half. That way, a lot of men had died. Then, at San Fernando, we rest for one night. They gave us a little food, a little rice, and a little water. Then, the next day, they put us back again on the march. And we marched up to Camp O'Donnell. That was the big camp. Camp for them. That was the biggest camp in the Philippines. And from there, the only one water faucet out there, we had to form a line to get a canteen full of water. And that canteen could have to last you for as long as you wish to last, because water was scarce, I mean. And they gave us a little rice in the morning, and rice in the And pretty soon, some of the sick people couldn't go out to work, so they divided the camp, the working side and the sick side. I was then sick with malaria. Malaria hit me, and I had dysentery. I had very, very something, because of malnutrition, it could swell your face up like that, your legs, your body could swell up. Because malnutrition, you were not eating right. So ahead of us, so I was in 6 days. Nothing happened to me there. I was there for 2 weeks. Some of my friends would come over, pick me up, take me outside to walk around. I couldn't hold still. Malaria kind of give you a little nerves, shaky nerves. And you feel hard, you feel sweaty. Malaria is that if you don't treat it, those people die of malaria. So they took me out sometimes, and then they take me back. But then something happened to me. He had this captain there. They gave him a ration of quinine, very little quinine. And that quinine, he could give it to the worst or whatever person he wished to go. The barracks consisted about, it was a long barracks, about 100 people. They all were there on the bamboo, all naked, all dying, all could hear the murmur of the dying. They have a detail to come in to pick up the dead ones every morning. They just took them out, dumped them on the floor outside, and they would take them and pick them up. They were dying by the thousands out there. And I was in the center, and this man came over to me. I was almost more dead than alive. He told me out there, he gave me quinine medication, and that kind of just burst me up a little. I started to eat, sit down, and before I knew it, I was able to walk. He saved me. I don't know who he was. I call all these people angels, you know, because later when I came back, I got to see him. Why me? Why pick on me? They helped me. So I call them angels that God has sent for me. We move close to Bataan. We still have our machine guns and the 37 millimeter gun. We were there in the bushes. Bataan consists of jungles and mountains and a lot of wild animals, fever, mosquitoes, and everything. So we moved close to Bataan and we're stationed there trying to protect maybe a landing or something. The one that were in command were all mixed up. They don't know. We didn't expect anything like that, and then we weren't prepared for anything like that. So we stayed there. And once, I remember the plane, which they called the spotter, was looking around, see if we can see or to spot somebody down on the ground. And we were watching him, and one of the gunners, the 7 millimeter, was aiming at him. And somebody said, don't shoot, because he was afraid his brother could notice us out there, and then it'd be hell. They could shoot at us. But this guy couldn't contain himself, so he let go of a bullet, and we saw that bullet hit right under the seat of the Japanese plane, right underneath. And that plane just went like that, and one to the ground. Oh, we holler and jump and went out to see what the Japanese were, like farmer and all that. We were all very excited. But then it was a wrong move when they shoot that, because these Japs had already noticed where the gun came from. So they start telling us. Start throwing big bullets at us, and I had a foxhole. I couldn't go in a park, but I went all the way down.
A foxhole?
A foxhole.
Okay.
I went way down, and I even had a pack of cigarettes, the carton. I went through that carton like nobody's using. I was nervous. And I prayed and spirit and all that. And that challenge came up for about an hour. If it was true, there was no trees standing, nothing like that.
And
so I went to the work section. In the work section, they give you a lot of more rice. At the sick bay, they gave you half a ration. At the work session, they gave you a full.
They're dying. They figured they're all going
to
die,
yeah.
And then you have to waste them.
So, I ate better out there. That's why I went out there and started eating more. And they took us to work on the rice field. I worked on the rice field. They had a paddy full of water. And I could go in there barefooted and plant rice. Then sometimes they had tomato patches. We could water the tomato patches. The river was close to this tomato patch. They had a 50-gallon tank, which we had to carry to the edge of the river, fill it up with water, and bring it back to the tomato patch. You have to have 4 months to do that. two on one side, two on the other. So, but when we were working the tomato fish, if I see a red tomato, I sneak it around out of the plant and watch his guard when he didn't see me, he see in my mouth. And I did that most of the time. Okay. And then...
How long were you there as a prisoner?
I think I was there for 2 years.
2 years.
In the Philippines.
Okay. And when did, what year or what was it in? When did the war end?
I was there in the Philippines as a prisoner for 2 years. Uh-huh. Then the Japanese decided to take a detail, a group of men to Japan. One man, so the users took out a group of men to go out and work. One man came up to the Barrera, don't volunteer on a small group. Wait for a bigger group. So I didn't know this man, but he came to me and said, Barrera, don't volunteer in a small group. So one day they meet 500 men. So I volunteered. And the Japanese took us in a ship. And they took me to Japan. I landed up in Osaka.
Osaka,
Japan. And there, they put us in a camp, and from that camp, we had to walk to work on a steel mill. They have a rail there with railroad cars, which they fill them with rocks. They could go to the steel mill, melt them up, then they come back and dump the waste again on the floor, we could scrap it up again, put it on a railroad car, and I could take it. We do that for a year and a half. And then things start happening. Sometimes we didn't go to work, but we could hear bombs falling somewhere, not close by, but somewhere I would hear noise. We knew something was happening.
Oh, so you didn't know anything, you figured.
You figured, uh-huh. Yeah. And it happened. And one day, 1 week, we stayed in camp all week. Line us up in front of the guardhouse at a big gate. They opened the big gate, and when they opened the big gate, we were surprised to see an American ship.
American ship.
With a captain and a driver and the American flag.
How did you feel?
We get so surprised, we didn't know what to do or say. So this American went to see the tank commander. He went to his office. And after a little while they came out. An American told his driver to get the Japanese flag down. Then they put the American flag.
Oh, wow.
Boy, we went crazy.
Okay.
We holler, we jump, we yell. I was awake at that time, 89 pounds.
Pounds.
And most of them weighed about the same. They were all 14. Human bone. But who works for Giuseppe, that the serious men are there, and the Japanese kind of surrender to him. And then, pretty soon, big airplane, B-17, flew over and dropped food.
Food?
Yeah, all over the place. We went out there, picked up all the packages and everything, and brought it back to camp. Oh, we had a party. After the party, we were all sick. We're eating so much. Boy, it was something that we knew that told us that Japanese had surrendered. And that there was really something that we didn't expect.
And today, now today, how has the war, like, made you as a person? How does it affect you? Like, how do you see things now because of the war?
It was affecting me very bad when I came back. I was out of Japan in a train, then they put me off on a ship. The America did that, and they brought up to the Philippines again. In the Philippines, they put up camps. We had a tent which was open all day and night with donuts, coffee, food, everything. The medics, the doctors were all over us, checking us. And then some of them flew back to the United States, but I was afraid of airplanes, so I waited for a ship.
Right.
So when she came, they put me on a ship, they brought me to San Francisco. And then I went, they came back to San Jose and Houston. I stayed there for a year or two. I came home. But then, at night when I could go to sleep, I thought I was still over there. My mother could come up at night and wake me up because I was screaming. I was like that almost for 6 months, a year. The only way I could sleep was getting drunk, where I could just lay down and go to sleep. Finally, the thing began to fade away little by little. Now, I don't feel nothing.
What I'm asking is, a lot of people respect you because of the war. Do you feel that way, that, you know, people look at you as, you know, a hero?
People look at me as a hero, but in my mind, I don't feel like a hero, because the war started. I only fought 6 months, and the rest of the war I spent in the prison. I don't feel like a hero. I do feel that I am a survivor, not a hero. I am a survivor. I survived the Death March. I survived at Camp O'Donnell. I survived the hell ship that took us to Bataan. Because on that hell ship, a lot of people died. They rose in a hole out there, like bread. And if we can think of the word, every most of them could die, and all they did was tie them with rope, hold them out, and throw them in sea. I survived that. Then I went to Osaka and worked at a steel mill. I worked, but I was still young, but I thought I had a lot of energy in myself. I could work hard. But if you work harder, you could have it and get through with the job that they want you to do. I could rest or look around. When I did that, I could go to a beach. The steel mill was close to the beach. I could go to the beach when I get through working. I live off a rock, and there was St. Clair, small little animals. St. Clair, they come out of the rock, they were on the rock. I could grab them, And then I could bring them and build a small fire and put them in a can, boil them up, and then eat them like tostaditos. Then, when I couldn't find sand crab, I could look for grasshoppers, big, leggy grasshoppers, green.
Mm-hmm.
I could toss them in a little can on the fire. One day, even fish ponds, you know? I didn't tell you about that in Osaka.
I'm sorry, on YouTube. But thank you very much, Mr. Barrera. And thank you so much.
And you know, this is the first time you know, Lola. Lola?
Uh-huh.
You're the first person I ever talked tell anyone about my experience over there. Being over more than 50 years, nobody knows anything what happened to me over there. And I like being trying, because I am getting older, I said to myself, I'm going to try to put everything in writing and maybe make a little book so my grandsons and grandchildren will know what happened to me. And you are the first. I never. This is the first time nobody has interviewed yet like this. And I wish I could explain it to you more clearly and more better, but as I said.
You did a very good job, Mr. Barrera. Thank you. You did a very good job. Thank you.
I hope that helped you a little in a way.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Cuando usted estuvo en esos tiempos, ¿fue seleccionado a la guerra mundial o le llamaron?
Me fui voluntario.
¿Se fue de voluntario?
En abril 8, 41.
En abril 8, 41. ¿Qué pasó? ¿Qué fue lo que usted recuerda que pasó?
Recuerdo que antes que se acabara el año ya estaba en las Filipinas, en 41. Apenas tenía unos cuantos meses de haber entrado de ejército. Y me recuerdo que yo era miembro de un grupo de artillería, Anti-Air Corps, y manejábamos una machine gun, 50 machine gun. Y lo primero que aprendí en el Army es obedecer. So, estamos en un track field, estacionados cerquita del track field air base. Y vivíamos en un campo que se llama Stottenberg, Filipino, un camp, Filipino camp. Y era a mediodía, estábamos en el lunch time, ¿sabes? Habíamos dejado el puesto para venirnos a comer. Cuando un radio estaba tocando, dejó de tocar música muy bonita. Y fue una señorita que estaban bombardeando a Tokio. Pues nos salimos a ver. Estaba el cielo muy bonito, limpio. Poco rato. Fuimos a los planos y alguien dijo que eran japoneses. Corrimos los troques, nos fuimos a la posición. Cuando llegamos a la posición, ya estaban bombardeando todo lo que era taxi. Tumbaron hangar a los planos. Teníamos B-17s, que eran los planos grandes. Teníamos T-40s, que eran los planos chiquitos. Los destrozaron todos. Y nosotros nos estábamos estacionados afuera del río. No nos tocó nada de las bombas, pero al rato llegaron los fighters, los small aircraft de los japoneses.
comenzaron a destrozar lo que no habían destruido. Y nosotros comenzamos a tirar, tumbamos unos que otros aeroplanos, y así como comenzó, se acabó la guerra, el ataque. Y ahí, como destrozaron al Air Base ese, ya no necesitamos estar ahí, retrocedimos más para atrás, el bosque, que no es parte del bosque allá en la Argentina, cerca de la orilla del Bay. Ahí estuvimos un tiempo. Y los japoneses comenzaron a invadir las Filipinas y los americanos comenzaron a retroceder a Batán, la península de Batán. Y ahí peleamos varios, como 6 meses. Y el general Wright ya se había ido y dejó a General King. Y King, el General King vio que estábamos perdidos, decidió rendirse, porque no teníamos comida, medicina, ni con qué pelear. Pues se rindió. Y después de ahí destruimos todo, nos rendimos y nos juntaron a todos y comenzó una marcha que es muy famosa, la March of Death de Batán. Y en esa marcha pues iban todos desvelados, hambrientos, enfermos. Murieron muchos porque no podían andar, porque anduvimos varios días. Y el que no podía andar lo mataban, le daban golpes y ahí lo dejaban tirar. Y por fin, después de 3-4 días de andar, llegamos al campo donde nos internaron. Y pues ahí estuvimos. Yo estuve enfermo, malaria, diarrea, dysentery, beriberi, que es una enfermedad por falta de nutrición. Pero me alivié y comencé a trabajar. Y estuve ahí en las Filipinas 3 años, más o menos 2 años. Después pidieron un grupo de 500 y ahí me llevaron a mí, me llevaron hasta Japón. Llegamos a Japón y estuvimos en Osaka, Japón, en un campo de concentración. Me llevaron a trabajar a las fábricas de fierro. Y ahí estábamos cuando el 45 se dejaron caer las bombas atómicas. No, Pearl Harbor fue cuando comenzó, atacó Japón a Pearl Harbor, que es Pearl Harbor, el 10 de abril, el diciembre 7, diciembre 8 nos atacaron nosotros en las Filipinas. ¿Entendiste?
Sí.
Yo estaba en las Filipinas, los japoneses atacaron Pearl Harbor el 7, el 8 nos atacaron a las Filipinas. Y después tuve 3 años y medio de castigidad, en preso. Y cuando por fin, con las bombas atómicas que Truman mandó a caer, subir, los japoneses se rindieron. Y el 45 fueron los americanos sacaron del campo. Y de ahí de Japón regresé a las Filipinas por otros cuantos meses. Y después de ahí me trajeron a Estados Unidos. Y por fin me retiré del ejército.
Entonces estuvo desde que estuvo el día 8 de diciembre, ¿cuánto tiempo duró su...?
3 años y medio. 3. Por cierto que peleando nomás 6 meses en las Filipinas. Porque no esperábamos ataques, no esperábamos que Japón fuera a atacar a Estados Unidos. Eso es lo que él hizo con una traición que él hizo a Estados Unidos. ¿No has leído tú la historia de...?
Sí.
Y fue una... como quien te da un cuchillazo por detrás. Despertó todo en Fernando, terminó a atacar a Estados Unidos, despertó todo, los barcos, a los planos, todo lo que había en Fernando, todo estaba ahí, cosita. Y después se pasaron con los filipinos y fueron tomando isla por isla. Pero Estados Unidos recuperó y comenzó a volver a tomar todo para atrás. Y Japón estaba listo para pelear. Hasta el último, ¿no? Hombre, pero con la atómica que destruyó toda una ciudad, Hiroshima y la otra ciudad, se vieron que estaban perdidos, se rindió el río Ojito.
Entonces, cuando usted regresó de allá, ya hizo su vida, no hubo nada, hubo cambios.
No, sí, vine muy trastornado. Yo estaba perdido aquí en Rivera. Hasta que no me casé con ese rechazo de la mente. Esta fue la que me enderezó.
¿Cuántos años tenía usted
con
usted?
Tenía 22. Eso fue, la historia mía es más larga y más grande, pero dice, es nomás lo ocurrido, ¿sí? Porque tuve muchos ratos que no esperaba yo estar aquí, como cuando bombardearon a Tartio, un hombre me salvó y que me mataron. Bueno, los aeroplanos estaban destrozando de todos los zeros, pilots zeros. Y venía uno de los chicos a mí con las balas, venía de los chicos. Y yo estaba rookie, con miedo, y como estaba en mi posición, nadie me dio orden de que estoy joven esa vez. Seguí y dije, pues. No, yo estaba viendo el aeroplano y haciendo lo que tenía que hacer. Cuando vi un hombre, me sacó de donde estaba yo. Cuando pasó el aeroplano, lo que estaba yo manejando estaba todo destruido. Si no digo que me saca de ahí, ahí voy a quedar. Después también cuando en campo, que me enfermé, ya estaba tirado para morir. Cuando vino un médico, y habiendo la garraca llena de hombres muriendo que estaban junto a mí, me dio un medio, me dormí otro día, me levanté con fuerza, me salí de ahí, me fui al campo de trabajo, ahí me encontré otro hombre que me dio que comer, un dealer de México. Y me quedé con él, me daba comida todos los días. Y después me llevó a la cocina y comencé a trabajar en la cocina y comía arroz seco quemado. Y ahí con me quedé a las fuerzas y después me salí a trabajar al campo a regar tomates, a hacer mucho trabajo de agricultura. Y después me llevaron en un barco para Japón, que me encerraron en el hall del barco. Y ahí encerrados no podían salir ni entrar. Estuvimos casi un mes ahí encerrados. Los que se morían los sacaban por la casa hasta arriba y los echaban al mar. Casi varios murieron en ese trip. Yo todavía seguí. Y son cosas que me gustaría poner en un libro, pero el día tras día.
Hasta el diario, todos quieren que me
hagan un texto aquí. No sé si tuve suerte o una coincidencia o alguien observó a Luke en el cine. Porque todos los que me ayudaron, ni los conocía yo. Tocó que ahí estaban y vinieron a ayudarme a mí. Y después ya no los vi, nomás en el momento que me ayudaron, después ya no los seguí viendo. Pues sería ángel de la guardia mía, como ese hombre que me quitó de la bala. Nomás ese día lo vi y ya no lo volví a ver. Ese hombre médico, que me dio esa medicina cuando estaba muriendo. Lo volví a ver en Japón. Me llamaron porque un hombre se robó un hueso de pescado y me dio a mí un pedazo y alguien lo denunció y me echó a mí también, que yo también había comido eso. Me sacaron desnudo en la noche, nos pusieron atención enfrente de la casa de guardia. Y a medianoche vino ese señor que me había salvado en Filipinas, ni sabía que estaba ahí conmigo, con el comandante del campo, y apuntaba ya cuando estaba yo, ya que le diría. Un rato se vino el comandante conmigo y me dijo: "Vete para acá, Alberto". Del otro no supo qué pasar. Pero me salvaron varios. Uno se tocó. Uy, y después salió.
Muchas gracias, mi hermano, por todo.